Hi everyone, I'm Scott Brown, and before we dive into today's lessons I learned in law, I just wanted to tell you about our friends over at Beamery. Beamery is a real game changer in the world of talent management, so HR and talent teams should definitely take note. It is trusted by the likes of Accenture, McKinsey, AstraZeneca and Uber to name a few. Now this is a great piece of recruitment technology, which is an AI-powered talent platform that will enable you to hire candidates faster, develop the skills of your existing workforce, and increase employee retention. With Beamery, you'll have a complete understanding of your workforce's skills and capabilities, and it's all about building an agile and future-proof team. So check it out. Head over to their website at beamery.com. Hi and welcome to Lessons I Learned in Law with me, Scott Brown, founder of Heriot Brown In-House Legal Recruitment. On each episode of the podcast, you get to hear my conversation with a top legal mind as they break down three of their key lessons that they've learned in law and in their career that goes with that. With any luck, you'll be informed and inspired and hopefully armed with a bit more knowledge to help you along the way in your own career path. And my guest today is Charlotte Pham. Welcome, Charlotte.
Thanks, Scott. Lovely to be here.
Charlotte is lead commercial counsel at the social media sensation TikTok, which has been on quite a growth journey, both pre and during and post pandemic. So I'm sure there'll be a lot to glean out of that and learn from Charlotte as to what it's been like being on that rocket ship. And Charlotte started her legal career at BLP, leading international firm, which is now BCLP. And during that time had secondments at BT, The Guardian and Tesco before moving in-house to her current role. With each guest, we also like to find out more about their life outside of the law. So we'll find out a bit more about Charlotte's home life and how she manages to juggle her demanding legal career with her family life with two young daughters and her studies in languages pre-moving into the legal profession. Charlotte, let's kick off with lesson one.
Thanks, Scott. So my first lesson is really to keep going. It's to keep going until you find the right environment for you. I think when you're starting out in your career, you can't predict what's going to suit you, and you don't know when you're going to hit your stride. And I think those early days of being a lawyer, you know, they can be really, really tough. And so I suppose my message to people would be to sort of keep the faith until you find your direction. So before I became a lawyer, I really wanted to be a journalist. And I, as you mentioned, I studied French and German. So I was abroad for part of my degree. And in my third year of university, I was in Paris and I managed to do an internship at the Guardian's offices. And, you know, I had a fantastic time there. I managed to get some pieces published. I remember interviewing a boy band and writing an article for the April Fool's edition about the French Gnome Liberation Front. And I just had the most fantastic time. And so I had my heart really set on becoming a journalist. And but I'd already signed up to go to law school. So after law school, I went. And after law school, I started my career in a city firm. And my first seat was in banking. And I think within the first 10 days, I'd already done two all-nighters. And I think my heart just kind of became heavier and heavier over that period. And I think I knew at that point that practicing law in that way was not going to be for me. It wasn't going to give me the kind of satisfaction that I was looking for. But I did keep going. And I'm really glad that I kept going, because it probably took me maybe sort of 3 years post-qualification to get to the place where I hit my stride and started to gain some confidence. And after that, things really started to kind of fly for me, and I started to love it. But you know, it was quite a long journey. But, you know, now I've been a lawyer for 20 years, and now I would say that I would have really regretted sort of giving up on it too early. So I think it's an encouraging message to sort of try and tunnel a path through to something that you're going to love.
Absolutely. So with those all-nighters, like, how did you come to, and which team did you qualify into, and how did that journey happen in identifying where you wanted to be?
So I qualified into a big TMT group, and it was a tough time, actually. So I qualified in 2002, and lots of people weren't kept on. So we were all of the people who were kept on were just very lucky and grateful to have jobs. Yeah. And when I had done my seat in that department, I'd been in the sexier end of media, basically. So I'd done some publishing contracts, and I sat with a music lawyer, and it was the year of Pop Idol, I think it was called. I don't know if anybody who's listening to this is going to be old enough to remember that, like the early generation of those shows.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, grandmother of X Factor, etc. And I remember sort of sitting in a room with Gareth Gates and Will Young, and so I had that was really fantastic experience. And then when I qualified, the spot that was available was in public sector IT outsourcing. I mean, there is a difference between those two worlds. And so it did take me some time to adjust. And then over the course of the next 3 years, I kind of worked my way back to doing things that I loved more. Yeah. And I went through, for many years, I was just a pure tech lawyer, actually. And actually, I grew to really love tech once I'd moved away from maybe the sort of the deals that I did at the beginning of my career. And so that's how I've kind of have ended up where I am. So I moved from then lots and lots of tech deals into more sort of media and content deals. And that was the kind of perfect journey to where I am now.
Yeah, I guess there's a lesson there in not thinking yourself or pigeonholing yourself as at that early stage, and knowing that you're learning valuable things and skills in the profession and drafting that are going to stand you in good stead, regardless what the contract might be about.
Absolutely. So I would say that to lots of junior lawyers, if you can't qualify into the thing that you want at first, you know, I suppose that brings me on to my second lesson, but it's about looking for the opportunities that are available in your current environment. Whether that's skills or relationships or learning from talented people in the business, or getting opportunities for development, or maybe a stepping stone to where you want to go next. But there is so much opportunity in most positions, if you're looking for it. So focusing on what you can get out of something is just super important for moving forwards.
Yeah. Tell me more about the studies abroad. How was that? How did you find studying abroad?
I just loved it, actually. So I've always been a very international person. So I grew up, because of my father's job, I grew up in the Middle East and went to an international school, and did my A-levels at the French Lycée. And then it just was a natural continuation of that kind of very international environment for me. So I spent time in both France and Germany. France, I was in Paris, and I did my stint at The Guardian. And then in Germany, I was in Berlin. And it wasn't really that long, actually, since Berlin had opened up, and I was living in East Berlin. Yeah. I was living in this wonderful kind of very sort of trendy area called Prenzlauer Berg, where it felt like you were uncovering a piece of history, because actually lots of people from the West had not lived there because it was kind of closed off. So it was just really, really stimulating. And it was the time when Berlin had it probably still does have. I'm too old to go clubbing now, but at the time it definitely did have that kind of wonderful, vibrant tech scene. And, you know, every night you could go somewhere different and there'd be clubs in really unusual locations. So whether that was, a warehouse, famously they had the warehouse clubs. But, you know, I remember there was also one in a converted public toilet, and there was just this kind of amazing feeling of kind of freedom and in the city at that time. But yeah. I think it was also the stage of my life. You know, I didn't have any responsibilities. So I was a student. It was a fantastic time.
Sounds awesome. I've only visited Berlin, never lived there. I did a year abroad as well, and would thoroughly recommend it to anyone, again, outside your comfort zone. And yeah, but that sounds great and like a great time to be there. Have you found your languages and that background, has that been something you've applied to your legal profession?
So yes and no. My role does cover a sort of multiple markets, and so I am frequently called on to be able to understand things in French and German. So I can listen to sort of meetings in French and German and understand them, yeah. But I don't draft in the language. I'm not qualified in the jurisdiction. I don't take meetings in the language, but my languages have nevertheless been really useful. But I think the most useful thing about those kinds of early international experiences is they really build you for a career in an international organization. It's been really great for me to come to an international organization, and it feels like coming home in some ways.
So tell us about lesson two. You touched on it there. Let's cement that.
So I think that's, for me, it's about when you can't control everything, holding on to what you can control and making sure you're getting something out of every situation that you're in. So to not apply too much of a simplistic kind of judgment to a situation or a set of facts, because something is rarely as simple as it's a good job or a bad job or a good opportunity or a bad opportunity. It's more around finding the opportunities within the circumstance that you're in. And you will never love everything about a role, but you need to learn to kind of take something from it for yourself. So in order to kind of carry on growing, you need to sort of look for what's available to you. And I think in a long career, you need to be really pragmatic. You know, you need to realize that this is a marathon, not a sprint. And if you want to keep going at this career, and even if you don't want to keep going in the same linear way, whatever experiences and skills you're taking and putting in your toolkit, you're putting it in your toolkit for the next part of your career, whatever that might be. So yeah. It's always to sort of think about what you can gain from an opportunity to keep moving forwards, because you may not be growing in one area, but there may be an opportunity for growth in another area. You may be able to acquire new skills. So mm-hmm. I suppose it's to look for the opportunity in everything.
Really good advice. From what you said, it sounds like you're constantly looking to progress, but at the same time that you have to step back and be kind to yourself and give yourself credit for the stuff that you are doing well and what you are learning. Do you have any methods for doing that, or to any things that have worked well for you in your career?
I suppose I like to look at other people who've been very successful who I admire. Mm-hmm. And I'll often, you know, whether they're people I know or people I don't know, and I'll often look at, you know, what journey it is that's led them to where they are. And actually, often, if you look at a lot of people's career paths, they're often not completely linear.
Yeah.
There are these kind of jumps that people make that you may not be able to explain from looking at, you know, purely from their profile. But what you realize is that from talking to them is that they have built up a kind of set of skills or contacts or something in maybe a very unpromising situation that has then enabled them to leapfrog into another situation. And I think career counselors and career coaches are often really good for pointing that kind of thing out as well. Mm-hmm. But I think it's about bringing a kind of maturity and a perspective to the situation that you're in to try and to work out what you're getting out of it, really, and what it can bring you
and where it can lead you. Yeah, and being open-minded. Have you set yourself in the past targets for where you want to be in the next year or in 5 years' time? Is it something that you've worked on?
Well, I'm always a bit wary of talking about a five-year plan, because I think that has other connotations, doesn't it? But so it's not quite as specific as that. For me, it's about continuing to grow. So constantly learning something. If you are not learning anything and you are not getting something else out of the role, then that for me is a kind of a real alarm bell. But yes, I think like all ambitious people, I have an idea of where I want to go, but it's not quite as simple as a five-year plan.
Yeah.
Following the river, I think it is probably a better
analogy. Follow your nose. No, makes sense. Tell us a bit about TikTok, and that you must have jumped out of your comfort zone slightly there. So I understand you were second lawyer in EMEA, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I was the EMEA GC's first recruit. So I was there when we were not very many people in Europe, you know, maybe under 200, and obviously now we're way over 2000. So I've seen a lot of growth in the last kind of 2.5 years. Mm. And, you know, I've also helped to build up a legal team from scratch. We just didn't have one in the region before. So it's been an amazing, amazing experience. But yes, out of my comfort zone on a daily basis, learning new things all the time. Building the plane while you're trying to fly it.
Whilst it's flying. Yeah, God, must be scary. And incredible growth story. Did you have a feeling when you joined there that it was, or prior to joining, as to where it was going?
So I had always been really passionate about social media and the sector. So when this the opportunity to came to join, I absolutely jumped at the chance. And I did have a feeling that it would be very successful. However, I think the success that it has enjoyed sort of since lockdown, I guess, surprised even me. So I always knew it would be successful, but the way it exploded into the mainstream sort of over that lockdown period was wonderful to see.
One of the big success stories out of lockdown, in terms of the target audience, very well timed. But yeah, it's been great to keep track of it and see things grow. I imagine the role is very demanding, growing at that pace. How do you manage things with your family life? So we're talking, you've got two young daughters.
Yeah, it is a demanding role. What I would say is that, you know, it's that old adage, isn't it? Which is that if you find a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I think, you know, it doesn't feel like that all the time, but it does feel like that a lot of the time, because one of the things about where I am is that everybody is very, very passionate about the company, about the product. And working in an environment where there's so much kind of positive energy, and where people are energized by building things, is really refreshing and gives you momentum, really. So hours and situations that may seem, you know, difficult in other circumstances, just it's softened by the kind of passion that you have for the role and by the kind of high quality of the people around you. I think one of the lovely things about being in an organization that's relatively new is that no one is institutionalized or sort of disenfranchised yet. So people come in with the opportunity to make an impact and, you know, really with the wind beneath their wings, wanting to go somewhere. And that is just really refreshing to be a part of. So I think a lot of being able to cope with a demanding job is about the environment that you're in. So if you're energized by the quality of the people, the canvas of issues you have to work on, the ability to make an impact, then really, you know, you've won half the battle, because mentally you want to be there and you're engaged in what you're doing. In terms of how you balance that practically with a young family, well, I mean, those questions are probably the same for everyone in any kind of environment, in any different sectors. I have a huge support network. So they say, you know, that behind, what did they used to say? They used to say behind every successful man was a successful.
Every great man, there's a great woman. Yeah. And even greater women. Yeah. I think that's
exactly. So I'm going to flip that round, obviously. So my husband's a huge source of support to me, and my family are a huge source of support to me. So I'm very fortunate to have a big support network. But I've always done this. I've always worked since my children were born. So actually for me, it's just what I do. I may not have worked at the pace always that I work now, but it is, I wouldn't say it's easy for me, but it is also second nature, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to find a way. It sounds good. I think the last time I heard that quote of behind every man there's a greater woman was I'm terrified of heights, and I was on a walk in Peru, and I absolutely froze on this cliff edge, and my wife, my partner at the time, was stood behind me, and an American guy like sauntered past and passed that phrase. Yeah, that's my immediate thought of that, just sweaty hands on the edge of a cliff. So moving on, Charlotte, can you tell us lesson three?
Yes. So, I mean, there were so many things that I could have spoken about, but I suppose one of the things I wanted to talk about was a lesson that I've learned in terms of being successful in an in-house role, which, you know, success in an in-house role looks quite different, I think, to success in a private practice role. And my sort of lesson for that is really to build relationships above all else. So, you know, the time that you invest in people will pay dividends in that environment. I mean, I think that's probably true in lots of circumstances, but particularly this environment that we're talking about. So don't spend all your time buried behind your computer giving brilliant legal advice. Just get a relationship with the people you work with every day, and that will make them see you as so much more than a mouthpiece for legal advice. And then that connection will just make it much easier to have a successful in-house career. They'll bring their problems to you. They'll want to talk to you for reasons not just connected with the law. They'll talk to you about a wider range of issues. You'll be able to add more value by having those kind of conversations that aren't immediately about the single issue in front of you. So it's to really sort of try and develop your relationships and embed yourself in the business that way.
How do you go about doing that? What's worked for you?
So I was really lucky because I came in so early. I've got fantastic connections with the other people who were here really early on. But obviously, our organisation has kind of grown a lot. So in a very short time, and it's sometimes hard to keep up with the growth and to work out who you should be making connections with. But what I would say is that you only need a few very good connections, because actually they can connect you to other people. So, you know, there are these super connectors that in any organization, and I think a relationship with one or two of those is usually enough.
Yeah. How do you find legals perceived within tech, obviously your experience within TikTok, but how do you feel as an advisor within that organization?
So I think we're really lucky where we are, because there's a good perception of our sort of department within the org, and we're very embedded with the business. We're not seen as separate. We do a lot on the commercial side of deals, which is, you know, really satisfying for the lawyers who work on it, but also, you know, helps with not being seen as being apart from the business. So we're brought in early. We're there all the way through, and we are well respected. So I think we are really lucky there. I imagine each organization has its own dynamics. I've been in organizations in the past where legal perhaps isn't as well regarded, or is seen as a sort of a checkbox or a gatekeeper at the end. And, you know, but that isn't the case where we are. And I think we do a lot of work to try and make sure that people understand the value that we bring. And I think that's a big challenge for a lot of in-house teams, is really communicating the value that legal brings. But we've been fortunate that we seem to have managed to do a good job of that. And so relations with the business are really good, actually.
Yeah. Interesting to know that the relationships are still key, particularly during lockdown where everything's been remote. Those relationships are still so important. And I guess you have to have a sincerity and it has to be, it's a genuine interest in learning about people. And that's where, as a lawyer in-house, you are more human than perhaps an advisor externally in private practice. Would you agree with that?
Oh gosh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, the relationships you have are everything really, I think, in-house. And I think one of the things that I really wanted when I was in private practice was to have those kind of closer relationships and to to be along for the whole journey of you know, of doing something, of bringing it to fruition rather than just working on it and never really seeing it again. And that's one of the really satisfying things about being part of a story in the way that I am now. And I think for any in-house lawyer is, you know, you're part of that story, and it is, you know, human beings love stories, don't they? We can only kind of make sense of the world in stories and narratives. And I think for a long career or a career which is demanding and therefore, you know, a very big part of who you are in your life, it's satisfying to be part of a bigger journey and a bigger story to fit yourself inside that.
Yeah. Awesome. So TikTok's team hiring, looking for people to join the team. What's the best way for people to hear about those types of opportunities?
Yes. So actually we have quite a few open roles in the broader team. We advertise them on LinkedIn, but we also put them on our careers page, and people can also get in touch with me if they want to talk about any of those roles. Obviously, I'd be happy to chat to them. But yes, keen for people to reach out if they're interested.
Sounds like a great place to be and lots of interesting work to do. Well, thank you for joining me today, Charlotte. It was great to learn more about your career and hear about some of your experiences, particularly within the in-house context.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks so much for having me. I've really enjoyed this podcast series. So I was thrilled to be part of it.
No, it's great to have you. Thank you for joining. It's those little stories. I think, well, I've heard from some of the guests as well. It's quite therapeutic to jot things down and write about stuff you've learned as well. So hopefully you've found that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charlotte. That was great. Thank you for sharing those insights and the lessons that you've learned in your career to date. It's fascinating getting an insight into what it's like to work at such a fast growth, high speed business like TikTok. Some really great things there. And thank you for listening. If you'd like to find out more about any of our guests, or if you'd like to listen to episodes previously in the series, head over to harrietbrown.com/podcast. We'd love to hear your feedback. It's great to hear positive news and how the podcast is being received. So please rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Brown. Thanks for listening.